down.
Right. Otherwise, I'm going to have to get out the Nerf gun and start doing the presentation by sending you little notes.
Yeah, and so, like, when we're doing this, too, you should just, like, ask questions and stuff. Except for one of you, and you know who you are.
Wait, I think there's a power strip. There's a power strip right here.
Yeah, there's power down. Power.
There's power down here.
Oh, you got a laptop? There's power right here. All right. Yeah, there's power right here. I wasn't kidding. That was not a lie. I wouldn't lie to you. Oh, water. Hey, we have water too. Are you thirsty? Yeah, I was wondering. This is perfectly sterile. All right. Oh, were you going to?
I was going to introduce you.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Who shall I introduce first?
Josh.
Josh. Okay. Josh Berkus is best known as a core team member of the world-spanning PostgreSQL database project. He contributes to a variety of other open source projects, events, and campaigns, including Government, Open Data, OSCON, PGCon, BERT, Open Source Voting, Perl, and several application projects. Josh is president of PostgreSQL Experts Incorporated, a database consulting company. In his spare time, he cooks, reviews restaurants, and makes pottery.
That's
pretty cool.
It's very nice pottery.
That's pretty cool, yeah. Selena Deckelman, apart from having once been a troll, works for Endpoint Corporation and is an enthusiastic open source advocate and PostgreSQL specialist. She is co-chair of Open Source Bridge Conference, a conference for open source citizens in her spare time. She likes to mix drinks for her local Perl and Postgres user groups. Oh, I need to go. And fetch eggs from her chickens
to Portland.
When she has them. Or when they have them.
Yeah, when they have them. I don't lay the eggs.
No. Okay, and so today we have this 50 Ways to Love Your Project. Well, shall I? Oh, you don't need the abstract, do we?
No.
People are here because they want to see it, and not me. So thanks very much.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
but
thank
we
you.
Actually still need people to see you.
Yeah,
we still need your help.
We're going to do a demo.
Yeah, so does anybody have a laptop that they could loan for a minute? They loan Andrew for just a second?
Yeah,
it doesn't need to have power on.
Yeah, you can close it.
Yep.
We promise not to steal.
And Julian, if you could come up with your laptop. Yeah. So, if you want to hand that to me, I'm going to hand it to Andrew. Okay. Oh, okay. We got multiple laptops. We got multiple laptops. Well, here, you actually get two laptops.
Two laptops
here. So, if you two guys can actually just stand behind here. This is actually, it's our improvised visual aid. This is actually, but actually it's a shop window. Right. So if you want to go and stand behind the shop window.
Yeah, you're walking down Cuba Street.
And Julian, go ahead and pop open your laptop and look at it. There we are. And so this is your pose. You're going to pop it up on the laptop and take a look at it and that sort of thing. So now, for the audience, right? So this is our shop window to open source project number one. And if you walk past the shop window to open source project number one, what kind of people do you think are in this project? Yeah. Right. And so if you're into flashy graphic design, do you think this is the project for you? Or if you're a 15-year-old girl, do you think this is the project for you to contribute to?
No.
Yeah. So that's our first shop window. Okay. Thanks a lot, guys. We're going to return those to who they are. And what's your name? Stacy? Okay. Could you come up? part of a demonstration? John, are you willing to be part of a demonstration?
Jason.
Jason, sorry. I was moving the name as John.
That's all right.
You will be part of it. You can leave your back.
I'll leave it here. I'll
bring it back up.
As long as somebody watches it.
Yep. So, step. Okay, look out for the mic stand, which is right on the left. Okay, so I'm going to bring you around the frame here. Visual aid. This wasn't for the week. You want to go ahead and face this way.
Yep, perfect. Right there.
Oh, and we had some kids in here. We had some kids in here, but they're gone now.
Yeah, no more children.
So here, Selena, you want to join them?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'll stand here.
Right. So this is our second shop window. And, you know, you've been going down and you're trolling for projects, and this is your second shop window. And these are the, sort of the people that you see in the shop window. And they're standing there. So, guys, look really friendly and excited. Yeah, there we go. So, do you think this is a project where you can have a good time, regardless of what you're doing?
I don't think I heard you.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think this is a project that you could contribute to if you were a 25-year-old female college graduate?
Yes.
Yeah. And there's a project that you might even want to contribute to if you were a teenager. It would be different. Or if
need,
you were
like
disabled.
A skateboard or something.
Yeah.
Imagine
so,
a skateboard right here.
Right. Okay. So that's our demo. That's our visual aid. do you want to
hey,
explain
Jason.
A little what we're doing? Oh,
sure,
you've got your own mic.
Oh, yeah. I have my own mic.
Can watch
so you
want
to walk. Okay. There you go. Thank you, Jason.
Okay,
thank you,
Stacey.
So there's this idea that a friend of mine, my friend Andy actually, and I talk about called window shopping. And so when you're out there and you're looking around at things that you might want to contribute to for whatever reason, you know, like people contribute to open source projects for lots of different reasons. But, you know, you basically have these shop windows, these project pages. You have the people who represent those projects, like here at Open Day, they're at these booths. And you go up and talk to them, and you make some judgments, right? Like, we're all judgmental individuals, right? You make some assumptions about what that project is about based on the people that you see and how they talk with you, things like that. But there's also other things about our projects, right? We have bug trackers. We have software specs. We have the APIs that we implement to, you know, like, we output JSON or we output YAML or we read YAML. You know, so... So there's all of these different things that give people an impression about what your project is about and what it's going to be like to work with that project. So the whole point of that is just that you keep that in mind, you know, when you're sharing things about your project. Like, what are the things that let people know how it's going to, you know, what your culture is about? You know, is it about YAML? Is it about JSON? You know, like, those things actually do influence people when they're choosing projects to contribute to.
So that's our first bit in the lesson before we get into the 50 ways. How much time do we have at this point?
I don't know. I don't have a watch. How much time do we have? Anyone? Half an hour? Yeah,
okay.
Half an hour. Okay.
So the other thing, so that's from the perspective of the project, is both from the perspective of the attendee, of the potential contributor to the project. So how many people right now are heavily involved in an open source project? Okay.
So like half the room?
Yeah. And how many people have never contributed anything to an open source project?
Oh, yeah. All right. Awesome.
Yeah. So the window shopping experience works sort of both ways. I mean, one way is if you're involved in an open source project, like Selena said, you need to represent yourself according to who it is you're trying to attract. And you need to understand if you're not doing that. The same time, if you've never contributed to something before, open source projects in general are not very good at representing themselves. And so sometimes you have to look a little bit past the shop window in order to figure it out. I mean, as Leslie said earlier, you know, if somebody calls you a jerk and that sort of thing, sorry?
No.
It calls you a jerk or something, then, you know, there are plenty of other open source projects you'd be contributing to. On the other hand, you know, because of who you first meet, some open source projects can look like a bunch of geeky guys, can look like they're only concerned with network protocols or something, and actually have more going on if you dig into it a little bit.
Yeah, and that's what's great about conferences like this, right? You spend some time. There's a lot of social activities around these where, I mean, people do just talk about their super geeky thing that they're working on. But you find out other things, you know. You find out that, you know, somebody has, like, a sweet boat and they're a sailor and they invite you out to go sailing with them. Or, You know, you find out what people's other interests are that make them human, and you forge connections that way.
So, for contributing, we did the what's in the window. We wanted to actually talk a little bit about contributing to open source projects and where you can contribute. One of the things that happens with when we talk about open source is there's a lot of talking about code contributions and about core code contributions and, oh, I'm an Apache hacker or I work on the Linux kernel or whatever. And there's obviously a lot of sort of public exposure and PR and war stories and stuff in that. But the truth is that if you actually look at what's required to make an open source project successful, core code contributions are a tiny bit. And I even know of some projects where core code contributions are the things they do worst. Django, for example, actually, where they're constantly looking for core code contributions and not finding them, but they have so much other stuff in terms of advocacy and promotion and graphics and community stuff going on and people doing add-ins and that sort of thing, that the project can still be successful even if the pace of development on the core is not that fast. And so if you're looking for where to contribute, I mean, this is what I did as a PI, and this was looking at both two of the biggest projects I worked on, both Postgres and OpenOffice, and I believe most other projects, where you have this tiny thing where you have, like, the core code of the project, and then you have some other code, and they have a whole ton of other stuff that needs to get done to make the project run, and that's all based on contributions. And it's not necessarily all about coding.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah,
so this is just a diagram that Josh made originally to describe the PostgreSQL project and kind of how, like, our different interlocking pieces fit together. But it really applies to any open source project. So you have the core distribution, your source, like, at the middle, and then you have all this other stuff. You have your graphics, your GUIs and themes. You have your drivers and APIs. You have people who do performance analysis, people who write admin tools. You have this huge thing that's, you know, off the screen of all these downstream applications that get built on top of what you're building. And then I left out specialty branches at the beginning, though, but that happens too. You know, people make branches to implement specific functionality that may not fit into core. So you have all of these different things that are interlocking, and also the communication between these different projects to make sure that we stay in sync, and all of that really, it doesn't have a whole lot to do with the code itself. You know, in terms of the contribution, the actual contribution that people give.
Okay, so ready for the 50 ways? We're going to try to switch off on this, but we haven't actually rehearsed it.
Yeah, so this is going to be exciting.
So let's see how we do the tag team here. So, okay, obviously there is code. It's all volunteer written. There's contributions. Everybody tries to contribute code. So obviously one thing you can do if you are a hacker, you know, advanced C++, you know, whatever code writer, is contribute to the core code. You know, we still need that. That's open source projects run.
Yeah. Review the code. So this is a huge issue for any sizable open source project. We need people to review patch submissions. There was actually a sizable part of a talk about Rails. Like, one of the big things that they said was a failing of their community was that they could not review patches fast enough. And he showed a list of the bugs. There were like 1,500 of these tickets in this bug tracker, and most of them were code. But they just didn't have enough people to actually review it. So if you can review, please do.
Squashing bugs, of course. There's with any sizable project, there may be a lot of bugs that can be fixed at a sort of beginner code level or whatever. Sometimes even figuring out what's actually a bug and what's a false report is very helpful. And, projects that have bug trackers and that sort of thing require lots and lots and lots of volunteer effort.
Contribute an add-in. So if you've got something that you've developed for your workplace that you had to make special, see if you can contribute that code back, because somebody else out there might have a use for it, and they may even have, like, you know, something else they can add to it to make your code better. I mean, that's what open source is about, right? So you share it and you get cool things back. But please, if you have an add-in, share it.
Yeah. When I use the term add-in to describe the whole, you know, plugins, interfaces, themes, that sort of thing, that are optional components of projects. It's, our own term, but it sort of describes this whole class of things. Drivers and APIs, every project needs them, depending what kind of project you have, either driver, API, or both. Every project needs them. Nobody really, really enjoys maintaining them that I've run into.
I know this one guy.
Yeah. If you don't have them, then nobody will use your project because they can't interface their other stuff with it. So it becomes really, really critical to make sure that those are up to date and they work well.
So we also have some non-code things, which is actually pretty much the rest of our presentation. So first of all, create and maintain an OS package. This is a really important thing for system administration, for people actually using your project. So creating a package, or not your project, but any project. So creating a package and maintaining it really helps a project get out there and get used.
Yep. So applications, particularly this applies more to middleware and framework, et cetera, projects, but that's the majority of sort of open source. So applications are very important. People usually don't use technology just to use technology. They use technology in order to accomplish some sort of a goal. So if there's a popular application that's not on your framework or middleware or whatever, you could try porting it. You can create a new application that shows off the project's cool features. You can improve an existing application because a lot of open source technologies get adopted because an application built with them is the number one thing in their field. As Selena was saying, if your company has something you use internally that's not part of their business sales model, try to get them to open source it.
Yeah. So translation. If you know a non-English language, there is always space for translation work to be done. And in our project in particular, it's an issue. And part of our release process is getting docs translated. So if you can spare some time also to read existing translations and let people know if they're not so good, that's also a really important part of that process. And then another space for translation that people sometimes forget is just on our mailing lists, especially in the Postgres community, most of our mailing lists are in English. But sometimes people will post there because they don't know where else to go in another language. And if you can help that person by translating for them, it is a really huge benefit to the community.
So one of the things that I'm always looking for and have been on different projects that I've been on is good writers. Because for your open source project to be successful in promoting itself, you have to be able to get out your message, understand how it works. So for example, one of the first and most critical things is documentation, right? People are downloading this and installing it themselves. They're not necessarily going to a training class. Therefore, somebody's experience with how your project works is going to be based on how good the documentation is. Because no matter how good your technology is, if they can't install it because they don't understand the documentation, it's not any good. So, and the documentation has to be kept up to date with every single release. So lots of doc writer stuff.
So there are, believe it or not, some things that are undocumented. So if you find one of these things and you actually use it, at a minimum, producing, I think we're going to talk about blog posts a little later, but even if you just blog about your experience using something that's undocumented, it is of huge value to the community because, then somebody can just search and find it. Please write docs for admins.
Yep. Write a how-to. So reference docs are very useful, but frequently they're difficult for a new person to make use of when they're just getting started because they don't know where in the reference docs they need to go. So a basic how-to of, that synthesizes several things like, this is how I install Django and Postgres together on Ubuntu Hardy Aaron, can be extremely useful, particularly for somebody who needs to do exactly that or something very similar to that. So write one, post it somewhere.
Write a porting guide. Yeah, I guess, this I think we've got a few projects that have approached us, the Postgres developers about porting their application from MySQL to Postgres, for example. And describing that process and the problems that you ran into in that specific case is really helpful for people. So anytime you're going from one system to another, that information about what that transformation process, what it took to do that, is it's great. It's very useful to the community.
Yep. Write promotional content, of course. You'll go out, when you go back out into the hall, you see people have lots of flyers and handouts and that sort of thing. And that was generally written by volunteers for the open source projects. A lot of the stuff needs to get written and, new stuff every year.
And this one in particular, this is something where I drag my husband in because he's not into open source. He uses computers for his classroom, but he's a teacher. but he has a degree in marketing. So, you know, this is a way that you can, like, pull people who are outside of the open source community in and, like, ask them for their help.
And speaking of degrees in marketing, case studies are very important, particularly when people get into looking at your project for use in production environments. They want to know who else is using it and how much do they like it.
Write a magazine article. So whenever there's like a new release of software, it's a really great time to pitch writing a magazine article or, you know, to something like LWN, pitch them on a story about the new features in that product. I mean, that's probably, for us, it's been for a long time a number one way that we get information about new releases out there. And believe it or not, people do still read magazines. So so pitching those stories actually is very helpful. And they pay, too, by the way.
And if you're really a glutton for punishment, you can always write a book. because it's very helpful for people learning your technology, your, you know, whatever project it is you're using, is writing a book. And you can even get paid for it, although the per-hour rate is generally rather poor.
Right. That's about the long payoff, yep. I guess. Or blog it. So anybody can get a free blog. Blogging about... sometimes it may seem like you're doing lots of things that no one would ever care about, but for example, I think my most perennially popular blog post is one about doing a CSV command line export from Postgres. That is the number one blog post that I've done in the last, you know, like 3 years. So little things like that people just, you know, they're sitting at Google, they're like, ah, like, why doesn't this stupid thing work? You know, and they type in this keyword. Stuff like that can be really valuable to the community because it saves people time and then introduces them to like the wider world of the people who are using the software.
Designers. So this is one of those things that it's easy for the projects that are graphics oriented to find, but then they tend to actually use a lot of that effort. And for those of us who will work in like middleware or back end projects and stuff, very difficult for us to find designers at all without paying them gobs of money. So you know, we generally need things like, I mean, every project has got, open source project's got a website. And if you look at the average open source web project, the website design is terrible. I only know a handful of projects that I would actually say have really good website design. And those are generally website framework projects. But also designing all the flyers and the advocacy materials and logos and graphics. And we've got, so this is something I put together. And we've got our little elephant pin that Selena has and that sort of thing. And this is all stuff that gets designed by volunteers. There's a lot more need for design effort than we currently actually have volunteers in the sort of general sphere of open source, in my experience.
Yeah, so if you know any, like, roving, you know, hordes of graphic designers that, like, have lots of spare time, please introduce us. We could use their help.
Oh, user groups.
Yeah, so user groups. So this is really how I got my start in the wider world of open source community. I started a user group in Portland for Postgres, and I'd been part of a Perl user group for a long time. User groups are a great way to keep people connected and learning in person. And most of the user groups that I've started out with started out as like two or three people just getting together for a beer or something to talk geek to each other. So it's really can be a long haul to be successful, but they're really fun things to do, and there's a lot of resources out there now for running user groups, like, you know, how to get more people involved if you want to find those.
So conferences, of course, we know this because we're at, you know, we were just at LCA all week, and and one of the good things that you can do for your project is if you can give a technical talk at a conference about your project where there's people who might be interested in it attending, it's a good way to find the folks who should actually be using it. If there's booths, you generally need booth volunteers to staff the booths. So more people. And the thing is, we were just in the Postgres booth up there. People come up, they have technical questions, they have questions about... adopting it and that sort of thing. And if you can answer even
some
of those...
They want to gossip about Oracle.
Yeah, questions about Oracle and MySQL and a bunch of other things. If we can answer even some of those, then it really encourages people to use stuff and also contribute.
And the thing about the talks that people give, you might think that you have to be like some like hardcore hacker like Sarah Sharp, and you got to write a USB 3 driver that's the freaking fastest, most awesome thing ever. Well, actually, you don't really have to be. You don't have to be that person. You can give talks about just what you're doing right now, like very practical talks, like on the ground, like I use this software and here's how I implemented it, and here's how it's working for me now. Because that information is invaluable for developers, because the developers don't always get to hear from the end users, like exactly what their experience was like. So think about that. Like if you want to give a talk, like just, you know, it doesn't have to be some crazy fancy thing. It can just be about what you're doing right now.
Yeah, and if you have lots of free time and you like ordering people around, then go ahead and organize a mini conference. For LCA, they have mini cons built into the program. And so you can do a mini-conf for whatever your particular project is. Otherwise, if you can find anywhere that will host a room that will hold, 30 or 60 people for one day, that they'll donate you the space or give it to you for really cheap, you can organize a one-day, one-track conference, which is a good way to get started because it doesn't give you all these different issues. And then if you're in a user group and you know two or three people who can speak well, you just book them for this, and suddenly you have a conference for your project.
Yeah, and then another thing, too, is if there's a conference coming through your town and you know that someone prominent in your community is going to be there, just organize a side event. Like, most of the people that are coming through town, they're perfectly willing, like Rasmus Lerndorf, creator of PHP, came into town for a conference, and the PHP user group was just like, hey, like, we're going to have some beers. You want to come out with us? And he was totally psyched to, come out and talk with people. So,
sorry.
Just ask.
Infrastructure. Every project out there has a whole bunch of stuff that they have to do to keep the project running, in terms of websites, web servers, file servers, source code management stuff, plus all of the lists, forums, wikis, event schedules, etc., that require moderation and administration so that they don't get full of spam. And this is generally a fairly distributed volunteer effort, and it's a good way to get sort of flexibly involved doing a little something to help the project keep running without needing to have a huge time commitment up front or to know how to hack core code.
So when you're at work, talking to your boss or your company about using open source software is great. Great for your project, great for open source. Getting your company to also talk about how they are using open source using a particular project is really helpful. Because, again, it comes back to that practical information that everyone needs but we don't really have enough of. And then finally, convincing your company to actually do a full-blown case study that's a little more, formal than a blog and can be reused in other spaces. Like, that's really helpful, too.
Helping other users is all what's about. We're talking about open source communities, and a community means people talking together and that sort of thing. And for most of us who are very experienced in various open source projects right now, we all started out as newbies, and we all got help from somebody else. So one of the things you can do is once, you're a newbie initially, but, even when you're starting with a particular project, you know a few things that other people don't know. And even when you get a little experience, once you get past how to install the software, whatever it is, suddenly you actually already know more than a whole group of people who generally need help.
Like most people.
So you can help out the other people, in sort of return for the help that you got to install and set up stuff in the first place. So a mailing list and chat, particularly if you're involved with several different open source projects. It can be really valuable to help answer people's basic questions on another project's mailing list. Because, like as an example, for Postgres, that is, if you use Postgres and Drupal, answering questions in the Drupal mailing list is often a lot more valuable than answering them on the Postgres mailing list, because on the Postgres mailing list, there's lots of people to answer a database question. On the Drupal mailing list, there aren't a lot of people. And, of course, answering questions in other languages.
Oh, yeah, testing.
Yeah.
So one thing, coming back to that, we don't have enough people to review patches. Another thing that we don't have enough of is people taking those patches and then testing them on real workloads. I don't know if any of you saw Ted So's talk on EXT4, but that in that talk he showed some bugs that were only found because someone decided to put their production backup system on EXT4. There were some problems. We were able to recover the data eventually. Always have another backup, right, when you're doing this type of testing. But it's like those types of issues, you know, you don't often have sufficient testing infrastructure to get all of these edge cases. So if you have the ability to test and you're interested in the technology, please do it.
Yep. Now, one of the great things that we have in open source now for a lot of projects is that we have some automated testing tools. So various projects have their own build farm stuff. There's now this independent tool called Hudson that was released by Ubuntu, I guess, that does automated building and that sort of thing. And the only way that that works in terms of really testing something that has to be cross-platform, and most open source projects do, is that people actually donate their server time or desktop time to automatically run this on a schedule, run build tests, say, or install tests on a schedule and report the results back into a single server. So that requires lots and lots of people with lots of individual computers or lots of their company's computers that, you know, for 1 hour a week or 1 hour a day can run a test.
43. Okay, yeah, help improve automated tests. So, you know, most projects have sets of automated tests and usually they need more, or the tests themselves could have like a second set of eyes. You know, make sure that that test is actually doing what it says it's doing. Because sometimes, and you know, I'm sure none of you have ever done this, but someone might take the output that they expect and just kind of paste it into a unit test without checking to see that that was the result that they really wanted. So, you know, it's good to have a second set of eyes, and then that helps you, like you understand more about the project and more about what those tests are designed to do.
Performance testing. This is another really labor-intensive thing to do it. There are few pieces of open source software where you're not concerned about performance in some way. Whether it's, you know, like database performance throughput, netbook throughput or something, or in the case of end user stuff, simply, you know, reaction time for, you know, if I change filters in the GIMP, how long does it take? And the thing is that if in a large big corporation like Microsoft or Oracle, they have a testing staff of thousands of people that can go through this on different platforms and different permutations and stuff. An open source rely on contributors. And the only way that we can say, you know, the only way that the folks in the GIMP can say, how fast is GIMP installed on a G3 Mac system running OpenDarwin is because somebody's got that on their laptop and they actually went and they clicked around for a while and measured the reaction times.
So this is one that lots of people volunteer for, right? But checking standard compliance, it really is an important thing. In the Postgres community, we actually, I think we ponied up the money to get on the SQL Standards Committee independently now. Isn't that what we did?
Well, we've been trying, actually.
We've been trying.
Well, yes, they don't want to accept our money.
Oh, man, why won't they take it from us? We have money, take it. But what I was surprised about is, like, we're sitting around the table and we ask people, hey, like, who wants to be on this Standards Committee and go to these meetings? And, like, five people raise their hand. So these people are out there that really like to check out these specs, and it's a really useful, especially like for a project like Postgres, where part of our goal is to be standards compliant. So yeah, if you're into that, please do it.
Yeah, and now here's another one where we really, really require users is integration. That is, you know, does the new version of Postgres work well, but does it work well with Drupal? You know, does the new version of Drupal work well, but does it work well on Lighty? You know, that sort of thing. Because, you know, once you get into the sort of combinational and all of the dependencies you have, you're looking at thousands or millions of potential sort of combinations and dependencies and drivers and different things people might want to use. So, again, the best way to get sort of coverage for this is if as many users as possible take the combination of things they use and test that they're still working well with the new version or the latest release or the latest patch, a lot less people get bugs in production.
Oh, we only got three left. So testing applications. So whenever a project comes out with a beta, that is a great time for you to take whatever application you have that's using that software and try to test it out and give people feedback about it. That phase, they've stopped. Beta usually means that they've stopped adding features. That's a great time to give them direct feedback about bugs that can be fixed before the final release. So if you have at all have time to do this, please do.
Education. Very important, particularly since the proprietary software vendors have particularly been making a real effort lately to make sure that everybody learns proprietary software in school. So there are things that you can do about that. One thing is that if you have a lot of involvement with a school, whether it's, you know, a high school in your neighborhood or your kid's school or the college that you went to or the high school that you went to or something like that, what's the term for secondary? Secondary school. Sorry. You know, American. What can I tell you? Then one of the things you can do is try to get them to include open source stuff, include your project, in their curriculum where it's appropriate. So if they're doing a thing on, you know, computer art, then you can get them to actually use open, you know, GIMP and Scribus and stuff instead of proprietary software that the students actually can't afford at home.
Yeah, and it's happening more and more that schools are actually trying to use open source software exclusively.
Yeah.
In Portland, we actually have a school called David Douglas that went 100% open source. And there's actually, I don't know if any of you saw the lightning talk from the principal here in New Zealand. Yeah, I got a few nods. Like his school went 100% open source. So there are examples out there. There are people that are doing it. You can get in touch with them and get more information about it if you're interested.
Yeah, and Google also has this great program called Summer of Code.
Really
where they fund something like 1,000 students, something like that, worldwide.
Yeah, and it really should be Winter of Code here. But.
Yeah, Winter of Code, yes, thing, Winter of Code, where they fund something like 1,000 students worldwide to work on open source projects, to hack on open source projects in a mentored environment. And whether you're in a position to be a mentor or you're in a position to recruit students or you're a student, this can be a good way to participate in and contribute open source.
Yeah, mentoring is a huge thing that we need. Like, if you can read code, if you can give people feedback on their code, also if you just have some basic organizational skills, lots of projects that are part of Summer of Code need more mentors, need more people who are good at organization and, you know, keeping track of people. So volunteering there is helpful.
And, of course, the last one is money. Most open source projects are nonprofits, and they use donations to pay for bandwidth fees and to pay for conferences and booths at conferences and sending speakers places and joining standards committees.
And beer.
So you can donate to a lot of projects to help support their efforts.
Yeah.
So that was the 50 ways.
Okay.
And I think we're actually out of time at this point. Yeah? Yeah.
But we can hang out here, though. Does anybody have any questions?
Actually, I have one thing here. Glenn actually asked me to give this away. So the first people I'd want to is our two remaining volunteers who I don't know if either of you can use this, though. it's Pro Linux System Administration. Are you a system administrator? Is your companion a system administrator? Use this? Okay, there we go. You're welcome.
All right.
And other than that, just questions.
You're all going to go out and you're going to contribute?
Yeah.
You're going to do it today?
Yeah.
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 That's right. Oh, that's a great story. Yeah. Did you tell Leslie?
Oh.
You should walk up to her and tell her that. It'll make her so happy. She'll, like, squeal. It'll be great. Yeah, I guess we should repeat this for the... our live internet audience.
Oh, yeah. So for the internet audience, the comment was that one of the other benefits of documenting your experience with a how-to or a blog is that you can go back to it later on when you've forgotten what it was you did in the first place.
Yep. I've used that technique.
So any other questions, comments? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.